Great.
Great.
Thank you. I'll be seeing you for the next couple of days as well. Right, I just want to start off with, I had a brief to read out, but I'll just probably ad-lib a few things. So I'm glad Ms. McCall could have explained why Mr. Espy and I have reasonably short briefs of evidence. The reality is both Ben and I and Vanessa have worked on stage 1, 2 and 3 for the Barnhill land, and we've also worked on two resource consent applications to subdivide on both sides of Bourne Ferry Road, and I also like to shoot rabbits on the Bun land. So we're incredibly familiar with the land. And in terms of the information that was submitted as part of the evidence, both Ben and I had our heads over what was put in. So what I'll probably do is just go straight to the question from Commissioner Dawson about why don't you just apply for a resource consent or the comparison between the amenity zone for Chapter 24 and the rural visitor zone. So if we're looking at a straight visitor accommodation activity under the amenity zone, all buildings are restricted discretionary consent with consideration given to the relevant landscape character unit, which in this case is number 18. At this point, it's in the decisions version that has a low capacity to absorb. Mr. Eastby has the view that it should be low to moderate. In terms of the actual activity VA, that requires a discretionary activity. Objective 24.2.2 deals specifically with non-residential activities. And generally, if you're looking at the matters addressed in those provisions, it's more around the physical effects in terms of noise, dust, vehicle movements, loss of privacy and so forth. So those provisions are there. If we then compare, say, the same development being applied for under the stage... Sorry, I need to work off my phone. I'll just get that. Yeah, I've got it in front of me. It's just my eyes and small texts are not good friends. Sorry,
24.216.
Provide for farming, commercial, community, recreation, and tourism related activities that rely on rural land resources subject to maintain and retain the landscape character of additional amenity values.
Okay, sorry. So 24.216, sorry, and I'm good. Yes, it is.
It's provide for.
Provide for, yes.
Rely on the rural land resource.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think these would argue that. This is a nice piece of rural land next to the trail. And
yep.
Perfect. And maintaining and enhancing landscape character and visual amenity values is what you need to do in the RVZ anyway.
Yes.
That's what the RVZ has to achieve, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
So, not much different.
Yeah, there is. Well, that policy.
In terms of the policy.
The policy is.
The policy basis. I mean, you can see what you mean about. Well, you've got 2422 in its policy, but again, do not have adverse effects on landscape character and amenity values that are more than minor and don't have safe and efficient operating of the roading and trail compatible. Oops, mine's disappeared, sorry. So what I'm interested in is, I mean, I know the consents are required. Discretionary and restricted discretionary consents are required in this zone, as one would expect in a broad zone like this. But are the objectives and policies really standing in the way of those consents?
No, I don't think so. In terms of, if you come along with a proposal that can accord with those policy provisions, then yes, there is a good argument for it. But if I go back to the status of the activity being discretionary and the building status versus the rural visitor zone where buildings, and let's say it's 500 square metres at this point in time, are a controlled activity, visitor accommodation is a controlled activity with the matters of discretion. To be blunt, you've got one exercise, it would be most likely a non-notified resource consent. In my experience in dealing with the basin for a long time, even pre-stage 2 Wakatipu Basin, There's a 95% chance that this application, resource consent-wise, would be publicly notified. And that then leads into to a whole raft of issues in terms of, whilst I may believe that there's a strong argument for it, you've got council planners, you've got neighbours who may be in support or against. And you know, for instance, the Barnes went through a subdivision last year on the other side of the Morven Ferry Road, $250,000 later to get consent based on one neighbour who was opposing. So the Rural Visitor Zone does provide certainty. It also provides, you've got the zoning there, so you can take long-term planning in terms of how you're going to develop the property over time, in terms of staging or the like, as opposed to, a zone regime which may have support for it, but each consent is not guaranteed.
No, of course not. So really, what I'm hearing you say is that there's nothing inherent in the zone that says that you need that you need a different zone in order to have a consenting pathway. There is a consenting pathway, mm-hmm. albeit maybe notified, maybe turned down, mm-hmm. maybe expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So this alternative is more certain,
mm-hmm.
if the zone is obtained. Of course it would be more certain, yep. and potentially maybe less likely to be notified and potentially less expensive and time consuming. So I suppose the difficulty then is there are lots of resource consents in this district that go through a, say, a discretionary pathway, but with this policy support.
Mm-hmm.
Do each of those deserve a zone? I suppose, it's this whole thing, do you zone for resource consents? And I'm talking to you as a planner now, and thinking about writing a plan,
mm-hmm.
and there are some zoning, I can't remember what they're called, the zoning principles that
mm-hmm.
Have been repeated over and over in many of these hearings, where providing for existing resources, things like it might be, isn't necessarily the role of zoning,
mm-hmm.
Or providing a cheaper road for resource consents isn't necessarily the reason for zoning. So, where do you draw the line between having a consenting pathway on the one hand and saying, well, that's going to be expensive and take some time, and might be quite a bit to have a zone.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you draw the line?
I think in this particular instance, I think what you've got, the trail, the junction of the trail with the trail's got in three different directions, which is a logical node to place, a visitor accommodation type activity in that position. So that, in my view, does distinguish this piece of land from others in the basin, and within the basin there are obviously a range of other different attributes in terms of topography, visibility, access and so forth. And I suppose with any rezoning, there needs to be an idea as to what is to be achieved. The idea here is a VA type development taking advantage of its setting next to the trails.
So how many other locations? I mean, I've already asked Mr. Yesby this, and he said there will be some. There could be multiple, and not only in this zone, but in the rural zone, the rural general zone,
mm-hmm.
where the policy direction indicates that the zone may be fine. What's the point of having a resource consent process if that's just when there are multiple locations where that could apply?
In terms of whether there's, the term multiple or a few, whether there's five or there's 50, I can't give it a definitive answer in terms of the number. What I can say is this is the only request for rezoning in the basin for rural visitor. The rest of it is outside of the basin.
Does that really matter, whether it's in the basin or the rural general zone? In terms of the applicability of this zone to multiple locations, potentially.
The applicability?
Of the RZ, the rural visitor zone.
Yep.
Are you arguing that just because this is
No. What I was saying, I think if I may have misunderstood the question in terms of are there multiple locations in the basin that the zoning could be applicable to? Did I get that?
In the basin or the rural general zone.
Okay, yeah. Well, I can't speak for the other requests or other potential options, and there could be multiple other ones.
I suppose, I mean, one of the reasons I'm asking you about this is that by asking for this zone to be extended over the RCL areas and into the Waikato Basin and outside of the ONL, which your client has asked for, and for asking for changes to the policies and then bespoke provisions, every time you do that, you are opening up the potential for that wider zone to be applied across more of the district. And that has to be a planning implication of what you're doing. And so, to me, it would be good if, to have a perspective on what does opening up the zone to all these potential opportunities, of which your clients is one, mean for the district, for the environment, the effects, the policy context of the district.
So in terms of opening up, is this specifically in relation to the submitters that have asked for the zoning as part of stage 3B, or are we talking further afield?
Well, we're not just asking for, the thing about this is that people are not just asking for rezoning, they're asking for changes to the objectives, policies and rules as well.
Mm-hmm.
And those objectives and policies and rules can be picked up by others in the future, used.
Yep.
And saying me too, I want one of those. We've already got 14.
Yep.
And so I'm trying to get an understanding of what these changes to the objectives, policies and rules, which are making this zone more widely applicable than it was when it was notified, what that means for planning across the rural areas of the district and the effects on the environment of the area. But particularly sort of the planning context.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking you've got, the approach that Ms. Grace could have taken is that maintaining only the notified rural visitor zones, which were all in ONL, so therefore there'll be no changes whatsoever.
I'm not asking about what Ms. Grace might have done. I'm asking, because that's just her recommendation to us. We have other people who say, keep it tighter.
Yep.
So I'm asking what your view is.
Well, I think... Okay. Well, in my view, there are existing land holdings or other potential land holdings that have the ability to contain visitor accommodation facilities in a generally remote location, which visitors to the district enjoy going to. That's not a hotel in the middle of Queenstown that's surrounded by traffic and so forth. So the ability to have accommodation in a different sphere, whether it's by getting to Walter Peak by boat, by helicopter, by car or by jet boat, provides a different experience for people coming to the area. And in my view, I think that's a good thing.
And do you think that achieving that through a multiple spot zoning approach of RV zones is more appropriate than relying on the resource consenting process in the rural zones?
Well, I think that the rezoning approach, each applicant gets the opportunity to put forward their case and look at the area. And I get your point. Well, sorry, if it is a point where obviously a resource consent application, there will be screeds more information in terms of what comes into a plan change. The reality is that this process is an opportunity for landowners to say, I think my land could be included within the zone. It has X attributes, and these issues can be dealt with. So I think it is an opportune way to deal with, an appropriate way to deal with it.
Why do you say that for a spot zone, which is what this is, you don't need to provide as much information as you would on a resource consent?
Well, if we're looking at, say...
I'm
sorry, if you're looking at, if we go back to Proposal X as applied for the Barn Hill land, whether it's under the rural visitor zone or it's under the amenity zone, there's still going to be a raft of information that's going to be required in terms of servicing, traffic, engineering, landscape plans, assessments and so forth. So I don't think the status of an application between the two zones would be different in terms of information. But you know, in terms of the submission here for the rezoning, clearly you're not going to be lodging landscape plans that detail exactly what you're doing on the site, because that detail isn't known at this stage.
But you've already said to me that by going to the zone, you're going to have a much easier route forward. It may not be notified, so you're going to have to find out what other people think about it. You've got a much better chance of being granted consent. We have to be granted consent because they're controlled exclusive. Mm-hmm. But you're moving from a fully discretionary consent under the current zone, whether you're in this zone or in a rural zone.
Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't you provide this virtually the same level of information as you would for a discretionary consent at this hearing in order to give comfort that the potential free road that's going to happen through the zone mm-hmm. has been fully assessed before the zoning occurs?
I don't disagree with that statement, or that question, I should say. I think it probably wouldn't be the full information in terms of resource consent, but there would be a lot more information. The reality is we, all of us sitting here on the other side of the table, are in a situation through, to be quite blunt, district plan fatigue and COVID-19. So, yes, there could and should have been more information. There is a lot of background information. I can pull out servicing reports. We can pull out a whole lot of stuff. But we're in a situation which we are at the moment, so.
Yeah, okay. Well, I understand.
Yeah, so.
All right. Can I just have a look at my list here? The only other question was about, Ms. Rob asked some questions of the chairman about what happens with the controlled activity. You know, how mm-hmm. much can you really change controlled activities through conditions without nullifying the proposal was applied for? And what's your experience as a planner dealing with controlled activities? I mean, in a practical sense.
Controlled activities, in theory, are supposed to be quite straightforward. In reality, as I've had myself and applicants been bullied around by council planners on controlled activities, and vice versa. I don't make the decision though. So I think the reality is, if it is a controlled activity, I think probably the key addition to that particular rule is location, because if someone rocks up with a building that's pink, there is a rule for that, and that's inappropriate. There is a height rule, and so forth. So I think location is the key aspect, and I think then the next thing is the density. So if you've got the example of, let's say, three buildings, 500 square metres each, lined up in a row, proud as punch, in my view, the council has the ability to go, no, we think there could be some stepping or moving back or digging down and so forth. So I believe there is sufficient control, and also having dealt with the council planners and landscape architects, they don't roll over. And I say they don't roll. And I say that with the greatest respect as well. They will put forward their views and will make the change. Well, basically, the carrot, and to be brutally honest, is do you want your consent fast and non-notified versus spending the next 18 months arguing with us? And generally, time is money for most people, and you compromise to... there are compromises on both sides, and to try and get that thing through.
Okay, that's interesting. Thank you. All right, that's it for me.
Thank you.
Thank you. And likewise.
Brilliant. Thank you.
And, Rob, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for you and your team. Thank you for your honesty stepping in at that point.
Thank you.
Like, we did appreciate that.
Okay.
And we understand your position, and if you like, you will understand that we're wrestling with the broader implications as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cool. Thank you.